Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is TWiG, This Week in Google, episode 22 for December 27th, 2009. The Cloud in the Bottle. This Week in Google is brought to you by the new voice-activated Sync, featuring hands-free calling, music search, and turn-by-turn navigation. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. This is TWiG, This Week in Google, the show that covers Google and the cloud. And on the line with us, our regular panel of experts, starting with the lovely Gina Trapani from the Research Triangle today.
Yes, indeed. Hello.
She's doing research.
Yes. Research in the mashed potatoes.
And yum. And turkey. Yum. Yum. Good research. That's the kind of research I can dig. I can get behind. It's great to see you, Gina. Also here, Jeff Jarvis of BuzzMachine.com. Jeff is in his home in New York City, I can tell. The book line study.
Just out of focus today. Feeling a little out of focus today.
Leo? Yeah, well, no, you look pretty good. He's on the blue camera today, which actually, ironically, is kind of a little yellow.
Yes.
But that's just the way it is. We were remarking before the show began that, you know, this is a holiday week, and I suppose next week will be the same, and there really isn't that much to say, although it is the end of a decade and the end of a year. So, I mean, one of the things we could talk about a little bit is what a year it's been. And a lot of the Google blogs did that, talking about the, you know, what happened this year, are their favorite new features on various Google products and so forth. But we could even talk about the decade, because this is completing the aughts. And Google was started in 1998?
It's 11 years old.
It's 11 years old. So, you know, most of its growth happened in this particular decade. So we could talk a little bit about that as well. And look a little forward to Google in 2010. And then, now, before I get email from people saying, you know, it's not really the end of the decade ends in 2011 with the conclusion of the 10th year of the decade, because we start counting at one, not zero. I know. And I don't care.
You love your
I don't care, because if on the last day of 2010 we do a decade ender, I'll get far more email from people saying, what are you talking about? You're already in the teens. This is not the end of the decade. So I'd prefer to get fewer mail from correct people than lots of mail from incorrect people, if that makes any sense at all. So what are the big stories of the week? There's not, you know, Google, I imagine Google takes the week off like any sensible corporation would this week of Christmas, and then next week is probably going to be equally slow. Did anything happen at all? No?
Besides the usual Santa silliness.
What? Did Google do a Santa thing? I didn't even notice.
Yeah.
I was offline.
I think the big thing for me was the open email came out.
Yes.
Google Open.
Well, what does Google mean by open? It was decreed to the land.
Ah. Now, and what does Google mean by open?
I'm looking for the darn link now.
You know, I think it was interesting. While you're looking, I will mention one thing I did notice, because I was tracking Santa, is that Google owned the Santa tracker. Forget NORAD. It was from NORAD. It was NORAD talking. But boy, if you look at the mashup, it had a big Google in the lower right. I mean, big Google in the lower right-hand corner. This is something I started to, I've been doing this for years, as all radio DJs did, because even 20 years ago, you know, before the internet, we would call NORAD and they had a phone line and we'd play it over the air so the kids would go to bed early, because on Christmas Eve is Santa getting tracked across the globe. And NORAD's been doing that, I think, for many years, 50 years maybe. Then, of course, once the internet came along, you were able to, in increasingly less rudimentary ways, track Santa. This year, it was a Google Map mashup with embedded video and photos and a big Google on it. Google bought Santa. I think that's the big acquisition of the year.
Definitely.
Google takes over. Well, it makes sense. It takes over the North Pole. Everything's free.
Oh, guess who went to NORAD?
Sorry.
You just couldn't resist, could you? I'll show you. Are they still tracking Santa? He's kind of done,
Santa's
isn't he?
Journey is done. Yeah, the official. The journey's done.
It was NORADSanta.org. Uh-huh. So as long as you're going to play the music, let's play. Really bad MIDI music. And Santa's completed his flight, come back in 2010 and see him again. But I'll just show you. So that's a Google map. But if you click on any of the like the video things, you'll see the Santa Cam video via YouTube. And if you go full screen, they did, I think this is Google SketchUp. But look, you see the big Google logo on the video. And they'll show Santa, and it's...
Santa has just been sighted off the coast of Florida. He has finally arrived in the United States and into U.S. Northern Command's area of responsibility.
See, and I swear that's Google.
Do we sound a little more excited about this?
Oh, you know, they use the NORAD. Everybody gets a chance, and they're not pros. But look, see, I think these are Google SketchUp buildings that he's flying through.
Oh.
See, yeah, that's definitely Google Earth.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But look at the size of that Google logo. I mean, there's no question. Yeah. Google owns this one.
It's true.
Wow. Wow. Pretty cool. So Google bought Santa. That's a big acquisition. And Eric did say they would be buying more things. Do you think they paid for that as an ad, or they just said, no, you can use it, but you just got to give us a big plug? They probably the latter, right? So this was the week Google explained what they mean by open. What does that mean?
Jonathan Rosenberg, the senior vice president of product management, put out a memo that tried to explain to the troops what was meant by open, both in terms of projects and open source and opening up your code whenever possible, though one wonders about the exceptions to that rule, and then about open information and our data being open to us. Gina, what did you think of it?
I thought it was really interesting. It was interesting. You know, John Gruber said that he felt that the whole thing was just this big pile of horse manure.
You know, Gruber has become the internet curmudgeon.
He has.
He hates everything.
It was interesting. I mean, you know, they had a little kind of jab at Apple, you know, implying that the iPhone and the Apple systems are closed systems.
Well,
and
they are.
It's open systems. And I think that's what kind of tweaked Gruber. Although Gruber made the point that there are a lot of things that Google is not transparent about, like its search algorithm and the way that it scales its servers. But, you know, Rosenberg actually did address that in the blog post. So it's a really long blog post on the official Google blog. And it was an email, I guess, that had gone out to company-wide. And he said, you know, there are some cases in which being open and transparent isn't beneficial to everyone. So his whole point is saying that openness and transparency and open standards and free data that can be transported, you know, from one place to another is good for the internet. And anything that's good for the internet is good for Google. And anything that's, you know, good for the internet and Google is good for everyone, basically. But he said, you know, there are times.
That's the exact expression, Gina. That's a great expression of it. That really is the spirit of it.
Yeah.
I mean, he said, it's good for GM. It's good for America.
Right. But he said there are some times when being open isn't beneficial to all, like the search algorithm. He basically said that if Google was open and transparent about what their search algorithm is, it would enable people to game it. So that was kind of interesting. Now, that was Gruber's complaint, like, oh, well, you know, Google isn't open about the things that make it money. But Rosenberg was saying, you know, that closed systems, that the old way of thinking is that closed proprietary systems are profitable. So you have this kind of old school MBA view of protecting your IP, but Google's taking the other approach, which is just to be as open as possible and to help along the internet and help along everyone who uses the internet, and that's only good for Google. So I have to say that you know, he pointed to the data liberation. It does, and he pointed to the data liberation front and a couple of other you know, initiatives within Google. He pointed to Android and Wave and Chrome, all open source projects, as examples of this in action. And I have to say that I bought it.
Here's the kind of the heart of the logic. He says, so if you're trying to grow an entire industry as broadly as possible, open systems trump closed. And that is exactly what we're trying to do with the internet. Our commitment to open systems is not altruistic. It's good business. Since an open internet creates a steady stream of innovations that attracts users and usage and grows the entire industry. He quotes Hal Varian in his book, Information Rules. Here's the equation. Reward equals total value added to the industry times our share of industry value. So he says all other things being equal, a 10% increase in share or a 10% increase in industry value should lead to the same outcome. But in our industry, a 10% increase in industry value yields a much bigger reward because it stimulates economy of scale across an entire industry. That makes a lot of sense. So leverage, he's saying we get much more leverage by improving the internet than we would by increasing our share of the market. It's a much more valuable thing for us to do. That makes a lot of sense.
It does. It goes to what you said last week, Leo, about the revolution we're seeing. It's not just, you know, a powerful, smart company involved here. It's new rules. It's just a new way of doing business that is made wasn't possible before because we didn't have the networked structure to enable this. But when you have this network ecology, it changes business utterly.
I blew it. I should have gotten Gruber on so he could declare horse pucky in person.
I think my favorite paragraph is this. He says closed systems are well defined and profitable, but only for those who control them. Open systems are chaotic and profitable, but only for those who understand them well and move faster than everyone else.
Yes.
And closed systems grow quickly while open systems evolve more slowly. So placing your bets on open requires the optimism, will, and means to think long term. At Google, we have all three of these. So they're basically explaining the reason why Google starts these projects that don't have immediately obvious business models that, you know, you can't look at and say, obviously, this is how they're making money, that they're going into long-term projects like Wave, like Chromium OS, you know, like Chrome OS, like Chrome and Android. And I'm right there with them.
They can afford to. Yeah, I remember a discussion some years ago after Six Apart, first in the early days of Movable Type, decided to make that a platform and then have a hosting service on top of it and finally started licensing the platform. And there was a hue and cry because they limited the license so much because they didn't want to disadvantage their own hosting service. I remember at the time thinking that the mistake was that they were in kind of a conflict of interest there. They should split the two up. Then along came Movable Type. WordPress. And WordPress had the .org. And when WordPress got VC investment from Polaris, I talked at the time to the folks from the venture capital company and urged them to do what Matt wanted them to do, which was to leave the .org as the platform and make the .com merely the first company built atop it. And going to what Rosenberg just said, it means that WordPress.com is faster and smarter than others, but that everyone who benefits the platform benefits WordPress.com and everyone. And that's just such a different way to do business.
And yet, I wonder, is it a good thing? I'm looking at another article. This is from the Philo Security blog that says over 60% of U.S. state governments have gone Google. Is that such a good idea that one company control the data for 60% of the state governments? That's a little scary.
We get this all the time now. Google's big, and so everybody says, is that a good thing? Well, yeah, there's danger there. GM was big, and it brought down the auto industry.
Right.
Yeah, sure. But what are you going to do about that? Split up GM? Would that have helped if Chevrolet were a different company? I don't think so.
I would hope that state governments are backing this stuff up locally. I mean, the argument is Google now controls government's access to its own data. I hope that's not the case because...
And what is the what if? I mean, Google gets bombed. I guess that's a bad thing. Google goes evil and suddenly what, cuts off all state governments from their license plate applications? It's an easy rhetorical thing to say and start a conversation. That could be a bad thing. Yes, anything in life could be a bad thing.
Right.
We don't rule ourselves around that, I say. But then I'm an optimist, cockeyed to a fault.
I think it's an important point, but you're right. What is the worst case scenario? And I can't really think of it. Some foreign government becomes 51% control of Google somehow.
You know, but here's what it is. If something goes wrong, right, then I hate to go so far off topic, but Twitter is exploding with this just now because the TSA came out with new rules.
Oh, let's talk about that.
TSA's going berserk. Because you're not going to be allowed to pee in the last hour and for profit.
Pee? You're not going to be allowed to have your Kindle. You're not going to be allowed to have your laptop. Although you're right. Not being able to pee could be, you have to bring a bottle, I guess.
maybe for the boys.
I renewed a proposal I blogged in December 2001 that we all have to fly naked.
There's an easier way to do this, which they do in LL. No carry-ons. Just eliminate carry-ons. Then you can pee all you want.
Yeah. But the problem becomes this is back to try to stretch this back to Google. If you make rules around everything that could go wrong or has gone wrong once,
you're the bubble boy. Yeah.
Rule, right?
Yeah.
We'll soon have the pretzel ban.
Right.
Somebody tried to use pretzel salt to make a bomb. No pretzels. You know, right. What can you do?
Yeah, no, you're right. You cannot protect against everything. I mean, and clearly our security on airplanes is all about security theater, not about true security. Yes. Why the last hour? Why not the last hour and a half? Why not the last 2 hours? Why the last hour? And that's just kind of arbitrary, isn't it? Mm-hmm. If I decide to blow up the plane at hour 101, have I done any less damage? No. So it's theater. It's security theater. We've known this. Bruce Schneier is very famously. There's a great article in The Atlantic last November, a year ago, the author conspires with Bruce Schneier, the security expert, to demonstrate that there is no security at all. He brought in knives. He brought in scissors. He used fake boarding passes. I mean, it was a mockery. It's theater.
Right. So go back to the fears about Google and states. So should the 23rd state not be allowed to use Google? 22 is okay. 20 is all right.
I frankly trust Google more than I do state government.
Yeah. Or the TSA right now.
Yeah. Let Google do airport security.
By the way, I tweeted this is I'm all in favor of government blogging. I think it's a wonderful thing. But it just doesn't make me feel comfy that I go to the TSA blog and what's atop it but a poem.
Oh, boy.
Christmas poll. They dropped the ball on the whole blogging.
This is one they need to talk about, yeah.
It was the night before travel and all through the suitcase. What suitcase? I'm not allowed to have one!
For those who haven't read it, I'm sure that there will be a fewer, and I think Zinnie Jardin was the first to really, she tweeted as she was being exposed to this for the first time on an Air Canada flight, that she even said the flight attendant seemed very embarrassed. They said, we've just learned about this. You will not be allowed to get up out of your seat in the last hour. You will not be allowed to use any electronics in the last hour. So put everything away. You will not be allowed to go to the bathroom in the last hour. All due to this nutcase who set off explosives on the Delta flight yesterday. And you know, it's like the shoe thing. It's like, well, what are you going to, you're going to wait and see what they do and then ban anything that, you know, I mean, okay, then what next? It's just crazy.
Yeah, I can't wait to fly home next week.
That'd be very, you know, I'm curious about this. Obviously, they'll do the minimum they could do without the public revolting or not flying.
They may have jumped the line on this one.
They're
going to have entire plane loads. Everyone coming in for a landing is angry now.
Yeah. Well, the word to the geeks is bring a paper back. Because
what's that?
I presume they include the Kindle in electronics. You're not going to be able to read at all unless you have something. You're going to be reading that in-flight magazine for an hour. There's about 10 minutes worth of reading there. Maybe it's all a plan to get you to buy things from that catalog.
Yeah, Sky Mall.
Sky Mall.
It's a Sky Mall conspiracy.
That's what it is.
Clearly.
Clearly.
The airline bailout.
Yeah. Buy more from Sky Mall. You know, if you look at that Sky Mall catalog for an hour, you're going to buy, you know, some, you know, golf club that has a radio in it or something.
Someone's got to start putting advertising on the puke bags because, you know, they'll have a captive audience.
Nexus One, that's the Google phone. And I, you know, there's still these rumors that they're going to sell it, although it's invite only, according to Engadget and others.
Oh, yeah. Crap. What's up with that, Leo? You got to hook us up.
Yeah, me? Like, I can get an invite?
I can get a wave invite. Gina, you got the first wave invite, I think.
Yeah.
I'm going to, I don't know. Hopefully I didn't call in all my favors for wave.
How would you get it? Look, if the three of us can't get an invite, how are you going to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Is it going to be registered developers? Is it going to be, you know, I don't know. How are they gonna choose? It's not like there's even now. Has Google made an official announcement about this, or is this just all rumor?
It seems like all the announcements are coming from Engadget.
Yeah, and now we're talking about a January 5th release date. It's the 26th. Don't you think that they would have said something, or is this just going to be a surprise? Yay! Some lucky people have been invited on the 5th.
Isn't that the Google way?
According to the frequencies that the phone is capable of, it's not an AT&T phone. It is a T-Mobile phone.
T-Mobile only. So even though supposedly it's not locked, in essence, T-Mobile doesn't lock you because you can go.
They don't need to because they're the only ones who have HSDPA. on that frequency. 900 megahertz, 1700 megahertz, and 2100 megahertz. Now, listen to this. 7.2 megabits down, 2 megabits up. If you can get that 3G from T-Mobile. But that's in very limited markets. 5 megapixel camera with mechanical autofocus and LED flash. Sounds a lot like the Droid. It's got Android 2.1, of course. 5 megabytes RAM, 512 megabytes ROM. 512 megabytes RAM, 512 megabytes ROM. 4 gigabyte micro SD in the box. Of course, you could put a 32 gig in there. AM OLED display, those beautiful displays. WVGA resolution. It's similar to the Droid in a lot of ways. But no slide-out keyboard.
I'm in.
I would get one.
Oh, I'm in.
Okay.
I've used up all my self-discipline on the Droid. I'm not even going to try.
You never did get a Droid.
I never got the Droid.
Now I'm going to be mad because I got the Droid. And now I'm going to be mad because let's see if we can get an invitation.
Okay, Gina. Yeah. All right. Now here's your psychological test for the day. So okay. January 5 comes the announcement that let's say February 1 you can get the Nexus One. And then January, 26th comes the announcement of the tablet.
Uh-oh.
Mm. What are you going for here?
Mm. Is the tablet Apple's tablet or is the tablet?
Apple's tablet.
Okay, so it's not an Android tablet.
I mean, the latest rumors there, and of course, it could be, speaking of theater.
Could be the fall.
Yeah, but the report is that they reserve some space at the end of January for a
day. Oh, really? And now everybody's talking about the fact that they have the trademark for iSlate.
Exactly.
I don't buy
that. So there's the temptation.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Yeah, the tablet hasn't, I don't know. I'm kind of feeling mad about it. I think I'll go for the phone. I'll tell you the truth.
This is like deal or no deal. And Jeff, you're the Howie Mandel of Twig.
Don't touch me.
I say, I'll take the phone, Gene.
Gina, you should open up a briefcase right now.
Yeah, really. Well, I don't. I'm with you, Gina. I'm real skeptical of tablet, but I also don't underestimate the ability of Apple to come up with some very interesting, for instance, marketing things. Stores and stuff that might make it more compelling.
Agreed. Agreed. I'm certainly looking forward to seeing it just from a design perspective. I mean, I'm really interested to see what it looks like. But I'm not dying for a tablet personally. But maybe they'll change our mind about that.
I'm not dying for a Nexus One. I don't think the Nexus One sounds so much better than anything else that's out there. I mean, it's an HTC phone. It's probably very much like the G2. I think the Droid is a great phone. I'm very happy with the Droid. I wish it had a better camera. It does not have a very good camera, despite the 5 megapixels. Mm-hmm. But invite only, how do you even do invite only at retail? I don't even understand how that works.
Well, the psychology of it is obviously working on me.
Yeah.
the invitation part makes it even more exciting.
How do I get an invite? Have you played with 2.1? You can apparently, if you have a, there is a cracked 2.1 that you could put on an unlocked Droid.
Ooh, is there?
Yeah.
I have to do that this week. I haven't played with it. I saw this very shaky screencast that just made me feel a little nauseous because I couldn't hold the camera straight. It was very Blair Witch, but it looks really good. It looks like an incremental kind of upgrade. Nothing, that was shockingly different, but it looked real smooth and interesting. So, yeah, I definitely want to play it with 2.1.
I'm hearing that the UI for the Nexus One feels different, but it's still just Android, right? There isn't anything they could have done specially for this, or is there a build atop Android just for the Nexus One?
I think it's slightly different. It seems to have the major difference that I saw. It's got a little home button that you push, and it kind of flings out the menu in kind of a flashier, smoother, transitional kind of way. I think it has maybe a few more different widgets that I hadn't seen before. But I think it's basically Android. I think I recognize it as Android even in a fuzzy screencast.
I don't know,
Leo, have you heard of anything too different?
No, I just wish, and I don't think it does it. I wish they had more home screens. 3 is just not enough. And I just don't get why they're so limited. I know that on the Aris, there's more because it's not a Google Experience phone. So Motorola, configured it with more. I don't know what'll happen when they give, I'm told this is imminent, push 2.0 upgrades out to the Aris. And I've tried all the homepage replacements and all of them just kind of
don't do it for you.
They're sucky. Yeah, they slow it down. They
I'm excited that Mint, the financial app, is announced that they'll have an Android app.
Oh, that's good news.
First quarter. That was one of the ones that was
that
was bugging me. It was one of the, it was like the one app that I'd point out and say the Android market is not complete because this is a great iPhone app and it needs to be out. And so
and now that Mint, Seismic is out for Twitter on the Droid, I think Seismic is quite good and it's free.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, that's fantastic. And Evernote,
I got on here. Yep.
Evernote's app, yep. That just got approved and now is official and out in the Android market. So the bigger holes are really filling in, and I like to see that.
Foursquare is on. Yeah, I mean, and you get stuff that's exclusive, like Google Goggles,
yep,
that you can't get on the iPhone.
And Google Voice, yeah.
And Google Voice, that's right. Although
Google Voice is now coming to the iPhone. We'll get to that in a minute.
Not officially, but there's a semi-official. What else is on
here? I wonder if it'll use a... Have you guys heard about PastryKit on the iPhone? Just see Gruber's piece on that.
PastryKit. Good name. What does it do? This is all the code names are pastries.
Actually, it's an iPhone thing. It's a JavaScript framework for the iPhone that makes web apps act very much like native iPhone apps.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is kind of interesting because it's really going to give the iPhone a little bit of a leg up on Android in terms of web apps. So that'll be interesting to see.
Now, Lifehacker did have a Google Nexus hands-on. I don't know if you know the guy or gal who wrote this.
Mm-hmm. Jason Chen. Actually, it was Gizmodo.
It's from Gizmodo. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He liked it. He says, thanks to a clandestine meeting with a source. Basically, it's Google's Droid killer. He says it's faster, it's better in every way. That's pretty impressive. He says slightly thinner than the iPhone, slightly lighter than the iPhone. I like that. It is a gorgeous screen. OLED screen is nice.
Now, is the Nexus One the first piece of hardware that Google has had a hand in designing besides their, you know, their search appliance server thing, that yellow box they sold to businesses?
Yeah, they do in-house stuff, but yeah, that's the first consumer thing I can think of.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I'm kind of... You know, like when the announcement goes out about invitations, I mean, they're not just going to send phones to people randomly. I mean, these are going to be invitations to purchase the phone, I assume.
Well,
right? I mean,
I don't know. Let's talk about thing. That.
Why not? Why would they bother with purchase? Yeah, I mean, give me an invitation. Give me the phone.
So you guys think they're just going to send phones to lucky folks?
No. They could.
Get the golden ticket. I know. Yeah, if you ask for the right search, you'll suddenly get a big... the magic duck drops from the Google's page and you get one.
Basically, Jason says if Google releases this phone, they will immediately preempt every other Android-based phone out there. It will be the phone. He says it beats the hell out of the Droid in every single task we threw at it.
Here is to upset the rules of telcos.
Yeah, you can't do that. You know, you won't get another deal if you do that.
So, but they won't need another deal. That's the point. Mm. That's exactly the point. They want to break those chains, Mr. Marley. And sorry, Christmas on the mind.
A little Christmas reference. That's good.
And change the way the industry works. And who else could do that but Google? And our customer is going to complain? Not us.
Microsoft has a very infelicitous phrase called killing your babies that they use internally only because it's so horrible. But essentially, it's what Google would be doing, which is that in order to go to the next thing, you have to kind of destroy the previous thing. And you have to be willing to do this. And this is what Microsoft says. You know, we're willing to undermine our relationships with Samsung and iRiver to go forward in the Zune, that kind of thing.
You know, I think you're right, Leo, that, you know, look at how television has done better than newspapers because networks were willing to just tell their affiliates to buzz off.
Screw you.
And we're gonna stream online because that's where the future goes. Sorry, tough noogies.
Now
it's
in Gadget,
the tough noogies economy.
The tough noogies economy. That's a much better phrase. And Gadget does have a review from April of a Samsung with an OLED screen powered by Android, but I haven't... That hasn't been released. The Samsung 7500, have we seen that yet? That would be a T-Mobile as well.
I think what this amounts to is we're hardware people. I think that the revolutionary thing here is not going to be the phone itself. It's going to be the model, the business model.
All right, we're going to talk about pastries And I guess it's pastry that's allowing the Google Voice app to come back to the iPhone. This Voice Central app in just a bit. Before we go on much, I want to mention CES is coming up, and we're going to be going to CES in style, thanks to Ford, and we're going to have a great Lincoln, I think it's the MKS, with Ford Sync equipped. So if you're coming to the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas in 2 weeks, come say hi. I will give you a personal demo of Ford Sync. Sync is the amazing hands-free Bluetooth, music search, media playing, information system in the new Ford Lincoln and Mercury vehicles that allows you to do things like ask for weather reports. You never take your hands off the wheel or your eyes off the road, though. That's what's beautiful. You don't look down at a screen. It tells you this is the five-day forecast. This is what the ski report is. This is what traffic conditions are. Even turn-by-turn GPS built in to all Ford Sync. Of course, every Ford Sync has an audio connection and a USB port. So if you've got a Droid, for instance, you hook up the Droid to the USB port. It sees the Droid. It puts the songs on its index, and now you can call for songs by name. If you've got A2DP built in, as you do on the Droid or the iPhone, the 3GS, you can get in the car and it starts playing immediately. You can control it from the phone. And I listen to my audiobooks. They stop when I get out of the car. They start up again when I get in. It is, simply put, the best. And going open, they're going to have an SDK. There's some big announcements coming from CES from Ford. I'm told. I'm not on the, I don't do embargoes, so I'm not on the list that can see what these are. But people are saying, wait till you see, wait till you see, wait till you see. Sync is amazing. It's the new platform in Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. It's kind of like HAL 9000 in your car without that whole lock you out of the pod bay door and all that thing. Go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com to find out more, or just visit your local Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury dealer and say, I want to test drive Sync, Ford Sync. And we'll see you in Vegas. We're going to be talking to the CEO of Ford and the chief guy behind the designer behind Ford Sync, and we're going to get the scoop from them on what's new in Sync. So Voice Central was an application that was yanked from the App Store when Apple pulled the Google third-party applications and Google's own Google Voice application. So the company behind Voice Central is coming back with Voice Central. They call it the Black Swan Edition. It's browser-based. Now, I don't know if they're using Pastry. What is it, Pastry?
Pastry kit
or not?
I can't find confirmation that it's using Pastry kit, but it is going to be using HTML5 local caching. It's going to be a pretty advanced, you know, web app, mobile web app.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I think HTML5 is, you know, going to make this kind of all moot because you'll be able to do everything in the web and so forth. Is Safari on the iPhone a good HTML5 client though?
I don't think it's perfect. I don't think it's quite all the way there. I know Google Wave will say that Mobile Safari isn't totally compliant. I think it checks for HTML5, but at the same time, I have seen John Gruber did a PastryKit kind of demo. There's an iPhone user guide that uses PastryKit, which stores the data locally. So if you look at the user guide once and then you disconnect your iPhone or your iPod Touch, you can go into your settings and you'll see the local store of the database of this user guide and browse it offline, which tells me that Mobile Safari is definitely doing, you know, at least offline caching of HTML5. And that's pretty hot.
Wow. Very interesting. And what's the best HTML5 client? It must be Chrome right now, right?
Or can you not say best? Well, Chrome is WebKit, right? So WebKit is Safari.
That's true.
And Safari and Chrome, Firefox isn't WebKit, right?
Nope. It's got Gecko.
But I think Firefox is right kind of at the front of the line as well. So I'm not sure if there's one that's best. I'm not sure if there's one browser that fully implements HTML5 yet, to tell you the truth.
It does make sense now, the Google Chrome thing, because it forwards HTML5. It kind of forces everybody to support HTML5. You can't let Chrome leapfrog you. So again, this is kind of that open strategy. Well, we don't want to own the browser marketplace. We don't care. What we want to do is forward standards, and HTML5 is a standard that is critical to Google to going forward. There's a great HTML5 demo of YouTube that doesn't have any flash in it at all. And that's got to be the future for YouTube, is no flash.
Yeah, let's hope.
It's interesting how the tech community has started to kind of turn against Flash. maybe mm-hmm. not started to, maybe always has, but with the vulnerabilities again and again in Flash. I mean, this thing is a security nightmare. The mm-hmm. amount of CPU cycles it uses. I mean, it basically mm-hmm. pegs your CPU, and yet it's ubiquitous. I mean, even yeah. Google uses it. But there's this kind of growing. I notice this growing demand, this tension for getting away from Flash. What can we do?
From the content side, you know, from my non-geek side, it's always the show-off tool. Right? I'm going to control this in every way I can. It's like the early days of not doing text but doing GIFs. It's the same for Flash, and it's overused in content like crazy. And it you know, even though Google can search it now, it hurts your Google juice. It just takes time. It's dumb.
So there, I'm told by the chat room that the HTML5 demo for YouTube does not work in Firefox, but it does work in Chrome, of course, and apparently in Safari. I'm trying to load it right now. If I can get it loaded, I will. I'm trying to load it in Safari. This is it. If you Google YouTube HTML5, this is a YouTube page that has no Flash. And it's all rendered using HTML5 and O3D. And it looks just like YouTube. It's got all the controls.
That's Safari you've got there, right?
That's Safari. Yeah, it's got all the controls. Looks like the full screen doesn't work. But and it's high def. That's pretty impressive.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very nice.
So I think you're right. I think WebKit is the key.
And HTML5 will replace Gears, right?
Yeah, Gears is dead.
Yeah.
It's dead. Okay.
So what is the status now? So I still use Gears on some of my on Firefox, but they're not going to support it anymore, Gina? What happened to Gears?
They're letting the sun set on it, quote unquote, which means that some of the apps still use it. Like they just graduated offline Gmail from Labs, and that depends on Google Gear. So it's still going to work with certain apps, but I think they're going to move apps off of it, and they're going to kind of let it, you know, die eventually. I think that's the plan, and transition everything to HTML5. But I think right now we're in this limbo, right, where browsers don't fully support HTML5, you know, and Gears was kind of this thing that Google had developed. So I think that Gears is going to slowly kind of ease its way out as HTML5 comes in. So, but, you know, major things still depend on Gears, like Wave and like Gmail. I mean, offline Gmail, anyway.
Now, the interesting thing about this Voice Central thing using HTML5 is it's still going to be a paid app. So now Apple's really got a problem, because now they got developers putting apps on the iPhone, charging for it, and Apple gets nothing.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, so this is going to be a pay-for web app.
According to TechCrunch, Apple won't get any revenues. It's just a mobile website. I guess you subscribe, right? It'll offer offline caching, takes advantage of the HTML5 features of mobile Safari.
Huh.
That's where it goes. Right, and the thing is, the developer GPhone, and the way he explains it to me is that you can't buy the apps because you don't necessarily have a phone account through which to buy them, right?
Right. So you do it in the browser. You do it just as you would any other paid service.
This is where Chromium goes.
Right.
So again, it goes back to what we said a few minutes ago. It breaks the business model of not only of telco, mobile telco, but also now Apple. The new business model of the iPhone.
The App Store.
The App Store is dead.
Apple's kind of hoist with its own petard, though, because they're the ones who didn't want to put Flash on the iPhone. They wanted to kind of support HTML5. In fact, they were the ones that, when the iPhone was shipped, said, we're not going to offer regular apps. We're only going to offer web apps.
Right.
So I don't know why, but you can't really look into Steve Jobs' mind and see if at that time he was thinking, well, we're going to do an app store, but it's just not ready yet. Or if he came to the belief we needed to do an app store, because when the iPhone came out, there was no app store. There were no apps. It was all web apps. And he said, you never know with Steve, because he'll lie through his teeth. But he said at the time, oh, who needs apps? It's all going to be web-based. He was right.
What you're seeing here, too, is the paid media model versus the ad-supported media model coming into conflict here. And one of the stories on the friend feed is that Apple's market cap is about to approach that of Google and Walmart. But that's the Japanese monster movie we're seeing in Tokyo Bay now. Again, it's a clash of business models.
The Apple's stock went up $6.94 pre-Christmas. Market value $188 billion, bringing its stock over $209. Of course, Google is what, over $600 now?
Yes.
It's just, it's funny money. But it is very, I mean, that's very interesting. Boy, that's incredible.
So you're really seeing then, I mean, we think Apple's this cute little thing. But
no.
It's a clash of two titans to control or to dictate, rather, what the business model of the web is going to be, I think.
And where does, and wither Microsoft? I guess wither's the word. I mean,
wither's the word.
Wither's the word. They're not even in the game anymore. It's like, eh. What about Microsoft? What do you think of Microsoft's cloud strategy? You know, look, they've got, I want to call him Ozzy Osbourne. They've got Ray Ozzy, who is the guy who invented Lotus, who's, you know, their cloud wizard. They've got Azure, which is their cloud platform. They've got Windows Live. They've Office 2010 is on the cloud, is, you know, much like Google Apps. But for some reason, they just don't seem as a cloud company, do they?
They don't.
Is it really a cloud? It's more like a cloud in a bottle.
Oh, I like it. Right? You're saying it's not open.
That's us. Puts things where we want to in this amorphous shaped thing. Microsoft says, no. Come to our cloud.
Our cloud.
We own the cloud. You can't own the cloud.
Now, Bing is doing better every month. Bing is somewhat of a threat to Google. In fact, I just put the Bing app on my iPhone, and it's exactly like the Google app. It has, you know, speech, voice. Not as good, but it has voice. It has images, maps with turn by turn. I mean, well, actually not exactly turn by turn, but you get directions. You know, Microsoft at least is trying.
You know, but that's the thing that Microsoft doesn't have. I mean, they're just too slow, right? Yeah. They're too slow, and they also don't have user trust. Like, when I was reading that blog post about openness, it occurred to me that, like, the essence of Google's business is user trust in the brand and scale, and, like, their ability to just roll things out fast, to respond very quickly to what people need and get it out there. Microsoft is playing catch up. You know, they screwed up everyone's trust with Vista, right? And with you know, a lot of the Windows not a lot of the Windows products, but Vista wasn't, you know, really didn't go over well with the mainstream consumer, and they're just slow.
There's a website, the chat room's given me a website, bing-vs-google.com, bing-versus-google.com. Can't choose default search engine, want to compare Bing and Google results? Put your query in the box and press enter. I'll put Gina Trapani, press search. And we get two sides. It's the on the left, Gina's Bing. On the right, Gina's Google. And I have to say, the Bing is prettier. You've got pictures right at the top. But it's, you know, let's see this. It looks like the same results. Your website, GinaTrapani.org, is first. Bing's got your Facebook next. Google's got your Twitter next. Bing's got your Twitter next. Google's got Smarterware. Smarterware is pretty far down on the Bing results. In fact, it looks like it's not even on the first page on the Bing results. Shocking.
James Fallows, the editor of The Atlantic.
I love him.
Former editor of The Atlantic. It was a piece on the media this week, the NPR show, or I guess last week prior, and tried to write a piece, research a piece using only Bing. And in about a third of the way through, he said he started cheating and used sites like that to find out what the difference was. And in the end, he said Bing was okay, but he said Google was far better.
Yeah.
But I think the bigger thing is this. I think that Microsoft is fighting yesterday's battle. They're now, as Gina said, they're slow. They're finally figuring out, search is a big thing. And meanwhile, Google is now moving past search. Yeah,
that's 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's true.
It's not like Google's going to give up search or grant it to Microsoft, but it's not where they're thinking.
It's not where the battleground is.
Yeah.
No, I think you're right.
Google has the scale and they have the head start. I think that this is what Google's all about, I realize, is the head start and the computing power.
Yeah. Like, it's well said, Gina. Speed and scale are it. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's hard to grab them. You can always do what they do, right? There's nothing so far. There's nothing terribly secret. You know, no secret sauce really about the end result, the edge uses. What's behind the scenes? Maybe that's different. Maybe the scale they have there, but that's just because they're so big. They have to do it well because they're just gigantic.
So David Pogue notes in his New York Times blog. A couple of days ago, Pogue's posts, Owners of BlackBerries on the Verizon network woke up one day last week to find they could no longer specify a preferred search service in the search box on BlackBerry's browser. It's Microsoft's Bing or nothing. Microsoft paid Verizon $500 million, according to the Register. To, again, who cares? It's like, fine.
So, wait a second. If you have a BlackBerry, you can only search with Bing? That's what we're saying?
On the BlackBerry browser. You can put another browser on your BlackBerry. Opera has a browser and so forth. But if you,
okay.
On the default browser on your BlackBerry, Bing
is... Boy, that's thinking customer first, isn't it?
$500 million. And, come on. That's hard to turn down.
You know, here's the other thing.
What a waste of a $500 million is what it is.
Microsoft.
Pardon me? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The amount of money that they're spending to try to win search... to win yesterday's battle is huge.
That's $500 million.
One little thing.
And what a waste. Because who cares?
Because the BlackBerries don't work.
Nobody's using it. I mean,
well, they're going down.
Yeah. I mean, even that battleground, that is, I mean, look, the BlackBerry is still the number one smartphone probably in the U.S. However, it sure doesn't feel like the future of smartphones, does it?
No, and this is why when I hear that Bing's market share is going up, I automatically get cynical and think, well, I'm sure that's because of some Microsoft like move on, you know, I'm sure they forced Bing as the default, you know, search on IE or something. I'm sure they pulled some kind of move that made that happen versus actually people switching to Bing because they think it's better. But
right, Gina,
I don't know,
back to the bubble and you know, use your VC money, use your cash to buy, if you could buy people.
But more importantly, who has the best free food in the cafeteria? That's what really comes down to. According to an article in Gawker, a string of cutbacks have threatened Google's status as a veritable Shangri-La of free gourmet food. Meanwhile, Facebook is ramping up the dining perks. The Times suggests Facebook might be the new standard bearer for corporate-sponsored dining. Francis Dinkelspiel, tour of Facebook's HQ cafeteria. She writes, let's see. Fred Labby, a credit analyst who arrives at 5:45 a.m. to reach the European market, says he ate at least two meals a day, eats at least two meals a day at Facebook. The food is fantastic. As he savored a plate of scrambled eggs and a bagel smothered in glistening pink lox. He put on 4 pounds in the past 6 months. They call it the Facebook 15.
I want to see data on cholesterol comparisons at Facebook, Google, and maybe that's how Microsoft will kill the others.
It's funny. I have a friend who was a corporate chef at, where was it? I think it might, oh, was it Lucas, I believe. I mean, really, this is true, that this is like the status symbol in a really successful company is the corporate food, and especially with geeks, because you don't want them to leave and eat lunch. That's an hour out of the day. If you can get them to eat lunch at their desk or at least go to the local cafeteria and eat faster, you're better off.
I maintain that the most innovation is happening by freelancers eating PB&J
you're right.
at home.
You're absolutely right. Speaking as one.
My mission in 2010.
You're absolutely right. That's where it's happening.
Gourmet kitchens.
Talk about fat and happy. You know, no innovation's coming out of there. But boy, they do eat well. We've all eaten at the Google cafeteria, right? At the restaurants.
Yeah,
oh. Have you eaten there, Gina?
I haven't eaten at Google. I've eaten at Yahoo. I have not eaten at Google. I went to a Google event and they had like a barbecue out on the lawn.
Yeah. They have that event. I miss that event. They have that event every year for journalists. But no, I've eaten at Chris Tabona invited me over once and I ate in the cafeteria. It was sushi and I mean just mind-boggling, wonderful food. And it's all free. But I wouldn't like it. I would get so fat.
They don't want you to leave.
I really think that's it. In fact, here at the Twit Cottage, we have a refrigerator which I'm stocking with delicious coffee drinks. Because I realize free caffeine is the single best thing an employer can offer.
It's true. Good caffeine.
Yeah, just keep them caffeinated. We've got an espresso machine already, but I want to make it even easier. Mountain Dew and Frappuccinos for all.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. See? See?
Nice. I like it.
See? Free oatmeal.
Oh, nice.
I remember when I knew Tech TV was done when they took the oatmeal out of the cafeteria. It's like, what can that cost? A packet of oatmeal in the cafeteria, and it keeps people at their desks. It's not good, you know, for you to live on oatmeal, but you could. So let's look back a little bit at Google in 2009. This was an amazing year for Google. Gmail offline, Google Earth added space and the oceans. Latitude hasn't really taken off. That's their location-based service. We watched the Google Books fight go back and forth. It wasn't anything new, but that's been the big fight. Chrome was out earlier than this year, right? Mm-hmm. But the Chrome OS is new this year. Wave is new this year. What else was new this year?
I've got the Blogoscoped. Is that the one you're going through?
I'm looking at some of the things on here. A lot of these are just little things like, you know, Google's venture capital fund,
right? Which has started investments. It did one last week.
Did they?
Yeah.
Now these aren't acquisitions exactly, right? These are just they're investments. What's the difference? They don't own a controlling stake.
Right.
Okay. Google's social news gadget. A lot of it's little stuff, things like the duplicate button that we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. Google Translator Toolkit. Wave was huge.
Wave was huge. A big one.
Yeah. That was probably the big announcement. Then Chrome OS, although we still haven't seen it, that was just an announcement. Nothing came out.
Well, on Android this year.
And Android grew up a lot this year.
Absolutely. It became serious.
And Chrome, yeah.
Data Liberation Front, we talked about that, last week. SideWiki, oh, there was a stinker. That's the thumbs down one, right?
Yeah.
SideWiki.
Oh, there's Go, the new programming language. I mean, that's right. I don't know how much traction it got, but still notable.
Yeah.
Programming language, I mean.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
The sheer volume of it is what's impressive.
It's a long darn list. I mean, a lot of it's little stuff, but it goes on and on. This is in blogoscoped.com, the official Google. It's the unofficial, Google blog. It is a long darn list. Was this the year that Google Goggles, almost forgot that. Was this the year that speed became important for Google? I think so. This is when they decided to get fast.
Yeah. And lots of developer tools.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of these were released in the last 2 or 3 months. We noted that the last couple of months were huge.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's what I blogged last week. We talked about it a little last week, but I start to see it all coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Singularity here, synchronicity. You use Google's device on Google's OS with Google's DNS to Google's browser, Google's advertising. Google knows where you are, knows who you are, knows the context in which you're asking a question, so it can answer the question, showing intent before you even ask it. You know, it all starts to come together. I wrote that in a column for The Guardian, and I got some predictable email of again, people saying, that's scary! Well, that's an emotional response, not a rational response.
What, though, I do think that, what do you think Google's net reputation change is in 2009? Positive or negative?
I think it's a great question. I think it's negative. And I think it's Google doesn't understand why or what to do about it because they don't understand the reaction to huge, the reaction to success. And they should have, I think, and when I was out there in January for my book event, it was the one question they asked me about their PR. I think they were aware of it and they don't really know what to do about it. And they still don't because they just keep on doing the, you know, we're Google, we're here to help routine, and they don't understand what to do when people don't like them.
You agree, Gina, as a geek, as a coder, Google's reputation not a net negative this year?
So wait, are we talking about mainstream users? Or are we talking about...
Well, that's the question. I mean,
you're right, Gina, to ask that, because I think what I'm talking about is a media impression, partly because media doesn't like them. I think mainstream users...
Okay.
Media has been taking pot shots, a lot of pot shots at Google.
So it's a PR problem. I should have been clear about that. It's not a reputation problem. It's a PR problem.
And that's why I'm asking Gina specifically how coders and geeks feel about Google.
I think coders and geeks love Google, and I think mainstream users also. I think that the reputation is mostly positive.
Mom loves Google. My mother doesn't go, "Oh, Google, they're scary now."
No, I was having dinner with some friends who are not in tech, and one of them said to me, Google is amazing. I was typing into the box something I was searching for, and it told me what I was just about to type before I typed it. You know, she was talking about
that's a big thing this year. Autocomplete got much better.
Yeah, the autocomplete, the site suggest, and with results right there. I mean, it's amazing.
That might be the single most important thing they did this year from the point of view of the normal user. That's what they see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. But amongst the coders and geeks, I think it's been positive. I mean, I think that so many of the tools, I mean, the three major releases this year were open source. They're releasing unbelievably cool tools for web developers from Google Web Toolkit and the Speed Tracer and Speedy and Wave. I mean, like, these are all like super cool geeky toys. I mean, they have me, and I think the general consensus is like, this is amazing. We live in the future kind of feeling.
I think you're exactly right, Gina. The question I have back is that if, however, Google's enemies and those who fear Google, which is, I think, again, emotional, get enough of a PR movement going against it, could it hurt Google in some ways? In government lobbying, in the idea that Google's too big. I mean, I wonder whether there's because the world loves them, are they leaving themselves vulnerable in their left flank?
How about the Google Books debacle? Did that hurt Google this year?
I don't think anybody really understood what was going on.
We barely could figure it out. It took us 8 episodes.
Right. Son Jake always told me, don't talk about that on the show, Dad.
Really?
It's boring. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. His generation doesn't.
No.
But I think that we do need to talk about it because I think there are consequences. And as we learned about it and as we understood it better and as understood the consequences of it better, I think it became apparent that it was an important issue. But it's like talking about, you know, tax code. I mean,
think Google realized they went over a line.
They crossed a line.
Well, and the line was that they controlled something too much.
Yep.
They put the cloud in a bottle, and for them that's not good. Because they are so huge, they can't have an excess of control or people will get nervous and will start really shooting at them. And so hosting the books, even though no one else did it, and they thought they were doing good, and I think they were doing good, they got too far ahead of themselves, and they have to start thinking more politically.
Yeah, maybe this was a coming of age for them in terms of managing their reputation. That I think they were a little innocent and naive and maybe realized, oh, we can't just kind of do it because we know it's the right thing to do. We've got to consider other stakeholders.
Right. I think that's an issue for them because there can be damage somewhere down the line. I think you and Gina are exactly right that programmers and people like them, business partners will never figure out what to do with them. It's a tough negotiation. It's what I've said about newspapers is that Google's mistake was trying to make friends with people who only want enemies. I think it's true in a lot of areas. I think they risk a lot of hassle in the EU. The Europeans are anti-American in some quarters and anti-big in some quarters, and they have the regulatory environment to be able to try to do something about that. Why they should is another question. And so you have the French case on the books. You have the Italian case this week. And you have the EU threatening to go after them.
I think it's very intriguing. I have to say, I think this is a case of I truly feel like Google was kind of this innocent giant and stumbled into something and said, oh. And now with this, for instance, this Rosenberg blog post is clearly, and Larry's New York Times op-ed piece, clearly an attempt to kind of patch this up a little bit and kind of fix the problem.
Well, I don't know if that's even the case. I think Gina said it well before. It really was just an expression of the way they've been acting, and it shows their philosophy. I'm not sure that there was any. Some wondered cynically whether the Rosenberg thing was a PR move. I'm not so sure it was. I think it was trying to reset perception with reality they see inside. Gina, you think so?
I think that they're maybe trying to be more open about their internal culture. I mean, I think that, you know, it seemed like they were kind of secretive about their very own culture, you know, for a while. And I think they're just trying to practice what they preach. I mean, if that email really went out to everybody in Google and they said, oh, hey, we thought maybe we'd put it out in a blog post as well. I mean, Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a matter of them just trying to practice what they preach and put it out there. I don't know. Maybe I've drank the Kool-Aid.
I can just imagine
what people are saying. I can just imagine the chat room is saying that I'm just such a Google shill at this point that I'm secretly getting paid. I'm waiting for my Nexus One, Google.
I think we're trying.
Well,
We are trying very hard to be balanced, but I think on balance, I'm trying to hate Google, and it's very hard to, because I believe Jonathan Rosenberg when he says these things. I don't think
another company come out with that kind of statement.
No, and if it's sincere, it's remarkable.
Right. Name another company where that could have happened. Yahoo, no. AOL, no. Oh. Microsoft, no. Sun, no. No other company has that kind of philosophy about what the world should look like and how they're going to help it do that.
I want to believe. Google's like Santa Claus. I want to believe.
That's why they bought him.
You know? That's it. Why that? I mean, and you know, I think somebody like John Gruber, and we'll get him on. We'll get him on next week. I think somebody like John Gruber, who is, you know, like maybe John Dvorak as well, kind of a paid cynic, you know, has decided I'm going to be skeptical, and it's good. We need people to be skeptical.
It's good. We do. We need skeptics. We need smart skeptics.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But
that's why
I try to be that, but
yeah, but you see through, you know, that's a different colored glasses. I mean, you got rose colored glasses and you got brown colored glasses. And I think they're both glasses and it's hard to know what the truth is.
But it lets you also look at the rest of the company through those glasses. If you take Rosenberg's memo and now put it against their business practices, I don't think it looks so good. Right. There's no reason they have to be as opaque as they are about their splits and how that operates. Again, be opaque about how the advertising algorithm works to the extent that you don't want it gamed. I agree with that. But there's a lot that could be more open there, and they are dangerously opaque, I think, in their business dealings.
Yeah, I think that it's great that they did this post because we can hold them to it. So when when they're not practicing what they preach, we can call them on it. And I think that in a lot of ways they really did practice what they preach. I love that they're releasing such major kind of open source projects and pushing ahead protocols like Speedy and with Wave. I mean, they're trying to reinvent some of the major protocols that run the web. And then when they do stuff that's shady, we can say, hey, this thing that you said, how does this apply here? And he was asking for people to call them out on it, basically. So in the post itself. So I think it's our responsibility to do that as much as I want my Nexus One.
Oh, come on. You're not that cheap. You're not that easy, no, Gina. Sell out for a silly phone.
No, I certainly wouldn't. I was totally just kidding about that. No, but I'm glad they put it out there, PR move or not, because, now they've set out what the mission is, and now we can hold them to it.
It's what I've always said about the "Don't Be Evil" slogan. If that had been etched over the walls of the doors of Wall Street and insurance companies, it might have inspired a few more people to hold their companies to some standards.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great argument, and I think it's something that we're going to continue to watch, and we're going to do our best, of course, to be objective about it, and bring in people like John Gruber to keep us honest. But I have to say, my leaning at this point is towards trusting Google, because they're doing so many great things, and we just, you know, trust but verify, keep an eye on them.
Well, the other thing about it is that what I argue to people who are not sure what to do about Google, I would say exploit them. Use everything that they give you for free. Use everything they can. Now, the argument is you've only gone into their spider's web, but I think we're all smart enough to figure out how to use data liberation.
Exactly. Back stuff up. Yeah. You don't have to trust them forever.
If you want to start a new blog business, you can put Google Ads up. You can drop them.
Right.
You can use great Google Analytics. If you don't like what it is, you can always buy a stats package. You know, use this stuff to your own advantage.
Right. Yep.
And the good news is that Google's kind of, in a way, is setting a standard that other companies, let's hope, like Amazon and others, will adhere to. And then we can use, you know, them in conjunction to kind of balance it. I'll show you, in fact, my tool of the week does exactly that. Lets you back up your stuff onto Amazon so that you have, you know, they'd all have to go bad at the same time.
Speaking of Amazon, if I can go back to the earlier topic, I just saw on Twitter, I put it up on the friend feed, Werner Vogels, the CTO of Amazon, linked to how to be a Kindle terrorist.
Oh, you mean like keep using your Kindle even on the airplane?
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
is it just like Turn off the wires. Cover.
Put it in the Bible. No one will F with you.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And I don't think anybody yet has figured out how to do anything bad with the Kindle. It's too primitive to be how to be a Kindle.
Well,
terrorist.
Except for remotely delete books.
Right. Well, Amazon might have, but we haven't quite figured that
right.
out yet.
Right.
Yeah. If the terrorists are as innovative as Google, then we're in trouble.
That's funny. It was only a matter of time before people started putting up posts like that. I'm sure there'll be a lot more this week. And we will cover it next week. It might be a slow week next week, but I think this would be a good week to kind of look ahead to what we would like to have Google do in 2010. So we'll prepare our notes on that for our next episode. Meanwhile, time for our tip, tool, and number of the week, starting, as always, with Gina Trapani and her tip of the week.
Okay, so I have two tips of the week, and they're both really light. It's the last week of the year, so it's a good time to change your master password and just kind of do a little inventory of your most important web apps and other places where you enter passwords and change your passwords. It's always good, a little extra security, make sure your password's up to date.
That's a good tip.
And then my other tip is last week of the year, a lot of people have some time off, spending some time with loved ones, log off and relax.
No, bad tip. wrong. Will not, cannot, does not compute.
Log off and relax.
No!
Me, I'm going to be trying. I'm going to play around with
packing
projects.
She's not on Twitter. What's going on? What happened? Gina, hello? Gina, are you there? Did you really log off?
Just log off and relax. Oh yeah, I'm going to spend some time actually interfacing with other humans, human to human.
I will interface with other humans. Humans.
Human to human. Humans. Eyeball to eyeball.
Humans. I am interfacing now. All right, well, good luck.
Your family loves you. Spend time with them.
No, my family's response to me is, who are you? Where's your BlackBerry?
Let the screen burn, heal a little bit.
Actually, my kids.
See the viral video of the couple who got married, and at the end of the ceremony, before they kissed, he pulled out his iPod, and the minister explained that he was updating his Facebook status.
Oh, that's actually very romantic. I find that touching. Aww.
The congregation got a good laugh.
Aww. That's pretty cute. Yep. No longer single. I think that's sweet. Your number of the week, Mr. Jarvis.
Well, factual.com, which is a wonderful open analysis platform for any kind of large data pools that are out there, got a whole bunch of data from Common Crawl, a nonprofit group that has a crawl of sites, and then came out with some stats against 4 million sites that they crawled. So 28% of those sites have Google Analytics on them. 12% have AdSense. 5% have either a Twitter or Facebook link, and 2% have both a Twitter and Facebook link.
I'm surprised that number is so low.
Yeah.
Wow.
I looked at the actual data, and of course, there's a lot of porn there, so you have to do the porn exception. But the 28% using analytics I found interesting. That means that Google knows intimate details about almost a third
That's
of
a
the sites
yeah.
on the internet or thereabouts. Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Wow.
That is.
That's amazing. My tool of the week now, actually, I want to do a tool of the week responding to you specifically, Gina. No, I won't do it. I won't do it.
What was
I forgot now. What was it that you were talking about? Is getting offline? I've blanked it all out. No, I'm going to show you how to back up your stuff online. This is a great service. It's free through January 31st. I think you might have mentioned. Have you? Any of you mentioned this? I can't remember.
We mentioned it last week just briefly, but I think I discovered it from the chat room on the show.
Yeah. And I've signed up since for. And one of the things I like about it is you can back up on their service, but you can also use Amazon's S3 if you have an S3 account.
Ooh.
So Backupify backs up your Twitter, WordPress, Facebook,
That's
Delicious,
cool.
Basecamp, Google Docs, Gmail, Zoho, Flickr, PhotoBucket, all your social networks. You know, in other words, not stuff on your hard drive, but stuff that's on the internet that you don't currently have backed up. And I like this idea of being able to back it up to S3 because...
That makes me wonder, Gina and Leo, I have a student in my entrepreneurial journalism class who got... grant money for a super secret project to kind of organize the data you have. I'll say no more. But if you took all of that stuff into Backupify, could you then do meta-analysis against your own data?
Oh. I presume so. I don't know what, you know what?
Is it in formats that doesn't
make have to look. I believe it is, in fact, in standardized formats, because Kevin was saying that it was, the metadata was there, right? Didn't he say that was there? Anyway, I just want to say it works. I will look at my backup of my account and see if it's, you know, kind of in a standard form that we could then, you know, parse and peruse.
You parse your friends. Yeah, you could do other things.
I think it comes back in XML documents.
That's what I think.
You know.
Yeah.
Very parsable for programmers. Leo, do you have to give Backupify the passwords to all your accounts in order for it to do its export? Or does it,
yeah.
Does it support OAuth?
Yes. No, it supports OAuth. So if you have OAuth, it'll support that. Yeah.
But like your Gmail account, do you have to give it your Gmail? So this is the part that freaks me out a little bit. Do you have to give it your Gmail password to log in and get your mail?
I don't remember. You give it your Twitter account. I don't remember. That's a good question. I will find out for you. I set it up and I didn't make a note of how. Well, I, you know what? I give people my passwords all the time. So I didn't.
Don't try this at home.
I should have paid more attention to that. I gave up on that a long time ago.
Sorry,
that would be
of
concern. No, that would be a real concern. I'll tell you next week. I'll go back and look.
Yeah, because I need to check it out. And it looks really good. I just, the idea of giving up all my passwords gives me the willies. But as
well,
we talked
remember
about
how
before,
we avoided
I did that
Mint?
With Mint.
Yeah, we avoided Mint for that same reason.
Yeah, I did it with Mint.
There's a new Philip Kaplan, the guy at PUD who did Eft Company, has a new service that I'm a beta tester on called Blippi, in which you give it all of your credit card, Amazon, and everything accounts, and then it's Twitter for your purchases. So it tweets everything you buy, in effect. Not on Twitter, but it actually tells the world what you buy. And then, which is weirdly compelling. You follow people.
That's a lot like Beacon, but done with your control.
But your control. Now, they use the same, whatever the WooFoo backend that Mint uses. So I feel comfortable doing that. When you set up your accounts, you know, they're not keeping that information. WooFoo does. So you can give it your Amazon, iTunes, Zappos, Netflix, Blockbuster, GoDaddy, Wine Library, Seamless Web, credit, debit, or bank account. And then it tweets everything you buy. You can follow people, comment on their purchases. It's a really interesting site. It's in private beta right now. I'm just kind of like giving up.
Can we see your purchases in your Twitter stream, Leo?
No, it doesn't tweet them out. Although I imagine you have to be on Blippi to see what I buy. Boy, I'll tell you what. Talk about monetization possibilities.
That's got a whole lot of cash written all over it.
Well, for instance, somebody on there bought a twittering weight scale. And Pud pointed out that five people have now bought that scale ever since the first guy bought it, including me and Pud. So watch for my weight to be tweeted soon. I couldn't resist.
So it's a Wi-Fi enabled scale that you program with your Twitter account?
Yeah.
That's so cool. So you put it on the network and there's like a web interface, like you can figure out like a router and you give it your Twitter credentials. That's awesome.
And every time you weigh yourself, it tweets. So I have a new account, Leo's_scale. Because I'm on a diet, I thought, you know what? This is a good way to be accountable, right? It's tweeting every time you weigh yourself.
I love this like biometric stuff.
Isn't that great? And it gives you Leo's_scale. And it gives you, there's nothing on there yet because I haven't got it yet, but it gives you, I'll get it on Monday. It gives you graphs and stuff. It's actually a very cool scale.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome.
Okay. You see why? Now people buy that. So then there was a little contest going on to see who could have the smallest purchase. And I found 1 penny HDMI cables on Amazon.
Oh, cool.
So about 1,000 people, I think, bought those. So,
wow. Social shopping.
Pud's very smart. Social shopping. I remember seeing Pud speak, and he said, the key is to create a site that once you set it up and it goes, it runs itself. You don't have to do any more work. Eft Company was like that, right? Everybody posted all the content. He just sat back and collected the revenue. I think he's got another
The other
one.
Cool thing is that I saw somebody say, a user of it, that he has three credit cards. He designated one for Blippi.
Yes.
And that's his public credit card.
That's what I did.
You can see the Blippi credit card company soon.
Oh, man, he's going to make a lot of money.
Oh, I see. So when you want to advertise a purchase, you use your Blippi credit
you
card.
Have the, you, yeah. you have sharing capabilities. You can say, don't share this, blah, blah, blah. There's some privacy stuff. But that's exactly what I did. I didn't register all my credit cards because I don't want them to see my porn accounts. But I registered the... I registered one credit card, and I know every time I buy something with that, it's going on Blippi.
Huh. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Interesting.
I had a response to your idea to get off the web, but I forgot what it was. Because I think mainly I blanked out your whole thing. Get off the, what is he, I don't remember that. She said get off the web?
Cute.
I don't remember.
Actual conversation, not on Skype, but.
No. No, I was twittering all Christmas.
I envisioned Leo walking around his house with his headset on.
My kids, yeah, pretty much that's it.
Carrying a mic.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. My kids, they say put down the iPhone. They really do. Sad.
It's because they care.
They care deeply. I'm addicted. What can I say? Hey, thank you guys. Happy holidays. It's been a great, wonderful beginning to our show. We're on our 22nd episode, which means we've been doing this for about 5 months now, almost half a year.
I'm sure I speak for Gina when I say thank you for starting it and having us on.
Oh, we love it.
Yeah.
It's our,
thank you.
It's our huge hit. It's a big hit on the network. And it's just really, it's so much fun to do. And I know our audience loves it. You can now watch it on YouTube. Thanks to Jeff. We are putting full length versions up there. It's not instant yet. It's still being done manually. Soon it will be as quickly as possible migrating from the show editors to YouTube. Also on twit.tv. You could download it from there. Soon to be on iTunes. And you can watch us do this. We do it at 5:15 Eastern, 2:15 Pacific every Saturday on live.twit.tv. Jeff Jarvis is blogging at his website, which is buzzmachine.com. Go visit, say hi, participate in Jeff's life. He lives in public, as we all do, I guess. Gina Trapani.
I don't spend in public like you.
The more public, the better, as far as I'm concerned. Gina Trapani is at smarterware.org, even if Bing doesn't know it. And her book, that's amazing. And her book is The Complete Guide to Google Wave is at completewaveguide.com.
Bingo, yes.
You did it.
I memorized it.
Yay. Thanks, Leo.
Thanks, everybody. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and we'll see you next year on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.